We are holding on Pei Dalet Omud Aleph about a third of the way down the Omud, about halfway down the narrow lines, line begins halfway down the narrow lines. Okay. Omala Yaakov Minah L'Rava. Yaakov Minah asked Rava the following question. Now, Minah, on the face of it, means the min. And there is actually a character, there are actually a couple of characters that are mentioned in various places in the Gemara named Yaakov who were min. You have one who's mentioned in a few places in the Gemara called Yaakov Ish Kraus Chanya, where it comes out from the relevant Gemaras in Avodah Zarah that he was a Talmud of Yoshka. And then you have another Yaakov Minah who's mentioned in a later period of Rav Abahu that Rav Abahu was sick with some kind of ailment, and that Yaakov Minah offered to heal him with something of kishur or something that would be against Torah. Anyway, Tosfos in a couple of places discusses. Now, on the one hand, you have that. On the other hand, you have all Gemara over here. You have a Gemara in Megillah that mentions Yaakov Minah asking a question in Torah by the Chachamim. So does it mean it's possibly the same person? On the one hand, maybe, yeah. I mean, okay, you know, Min can ask questions as well. But in some places, Tosfos mentions there's a bit of a problem with that. Why then would we be quoting him in a Torah context?
Cannot be him if
he... Well, that's the thing. In other words, that's the thing. If we were saying a Dvar Torah in his name, then no. But like this, he's asking questions.
How does this word distinguish between a min and just a general guy?
A min means somebody. Yeah.
But I'm saying, what's the difference between a min and a guy who just had questions and
so there's not there's questions. Because one second. Yeah. So the answer is a min is somebody who doesn't believe in certain basic principles of Yiddishkeit. Later on, the Rambam formulated them as the Yud Gimel Ikrim. Not all the Rishonim agree that those are fundamentals. But be that as it may, yeah, questions is one thing. But when a person says that I don't accept, let's say that there's one Hashem, I think there's more than one or whatever, then that makes them a min. Anyway, the point being that, on the one hand, Tosfos says, on the face of it, if he really was a min, he could be asking questions, but we wouldn't be naming him by name, which is an honorable thing to do in the Gemara. So therefore, in a couple of these places, on the other hand, there's at least in one of those places in Avodah Zarah where Tosfos says maybe it is the same person. Chronologically, it could be. If he was trying to heal Rav Abahu, he could have also been in the time of Rava, who he's mentioning over here in the Gemara that he's asking Rava. They're not that far apart time-wise. With that said, Tosfos brings in a couple of those places that maybe the correct girsa in these places where he's asking questions in halacha in Torah is not minoa, but rather matzah. The Yud and the Nun, in other words, got broken apart by mistake. Originally, they formed a tzaddik, in which case it just means that he's from a place called Masa or something. Okay. Anyway, so Yaakov Minor or Masa asks Rava, like this. Taimalon chaya b'chwa behemel simonim. We know that for many purposes, in particular as far as the question of whether the simonim of a kosher animal, we know when the Torah tells them in connection with the behemah, it also includes the chaya. As we said, we learned earlier in the Masechta that to a certain extent, the words chaya and behema are interchangeable sometimes. Mm-hmm. And therefore, sometimes when it says behema, it includes chaya and vice versa. In that case, eima nami behema b'chlal chaya l'kisri. In that case, our Mishnah had told us that you don't do kisri adam on domestic animals, only wild animals and birds, because the pasuk only mentions chaya or oif. But why? Maybe over here the word chaya has the generic sense, hello, and therefore it means a behema as well, and you should have to do kisri adam on the blood of a behema. Amalei. So Rava answers him, Alacha Amakra, to answer your question is why the Pasuk continues. The Pasuk says elsewhere, Al Ha'aretz Tishbachenu Kamoyim. The Pasuk says, describing when you're shechting a domestic animal, or the Pasuk says over there, you want to eat meat, and therefore you're shechting a domestic animal, and the Pasuk says, but you shouldn't eat the blood, you have to pour it on the ground like water, implying Ma Mayim Loi Boikis. So just like water doesn't have to be covered. Atainami Loi Boikis. So the same thing, blood of a behemoth doesn't require kisui as well. You're right, if we didn't have that Pasuk, we would think that Chaya maybe includes behemoth, but because we have this other Pasuk, Allah Oret Tishbachanu Kamoyim, that means behemoths are excluded. Okay, so then this Yaakov Minah continues asking, Elame Asa Yatbilubai, by your logic, if you're telling me that blood is considered water, then you should be able to tovel in it, just like you can tovel in a mikvah of water. But the answer,
what do you mean?
Exactly what it sounds like. If you have a 40 saw together of blood, then you should be able to tovel in it. If you're telling me blood is compared to water, the blood of behemoth at least is compared to water, then you should be able to tovel in it. The answer is no. Amakra, achmayin abor mikre mayin yiyatar. No, because the pasuk says only a spring or a pit, a water pit, or a collection of water will be tahar. In other words, that a person tovels in them, then they become tahar. Implying hani e midachrin alay. Only a collection, only water. That's only a collection of water in the ground, not anything else.
Question seeming indeed to be like a meme.
Maybe. Okay. So the problem is, though, the ema hani mili l'ma'uti shar mashkim d'le ikru mayim, maybe you could say, though, fine, the pasuk by telling us ach mayun abor mikri mayim is telling us, fine, the other mashkim, we know there are seven mashkim, among them you have hundred. The question is, because we're still trying to figure out, if we're saying that the blood of behemoth is considered like water relative to kisli adam, then why isn't it as far as toveling in it? Ah, you're going to tell me the pasuk mayun abor mikri mayim. Maybe you'll say like this. You have shiva mashkim, which include, for example, also besides the water and blood, you also have dew, and you have olive oil, and you have wine, etc. So maybe the pasuk is telling us the other ones, which aren't in and of themselves called mayim. The only reason they're called mashkim is because in various other places it's a mention in connection with the term drinking. For example, the dam chalolim yishta is one example. You have v'atavi kamayim b'kibro v'chashem and v'asmoisa. So you have different psukim that imply that these things are drinks also. So maybe then fine. So the pasuk is saying those things can't be used as a mikvah because they're never called water. Avol dam de ikri mayim, but after all, we just said that blood of a behemoth is called water. Ala arit tishmachenu kamayim, ema. So maybe you should say hachinami. So maybe you should say indeed a mikvah of 40 sa of blood should be kosher to tovelin. The answer is no, because trei mi'uti ksivi, no, because you actually have two mi'utim in the psukim over there twice that it says that it applies specifically to water. Mayan mayim ubur mayim, because you have once where it says in the pasuk it mentions a mayan of water, which implies only water, and another one where it mentions mayan is a spring. Yeah, it's a spring.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay. So only a natural spring of water ubur mayim or pit of water. So therefore, both of them can only be water. You can't have a mikveh made out of other liquids.
What's the context of that?
The context is it's in Parashat Shmini, where it talks about some of the basic dinim of Tumah V'Tahara, and it mentions over there that if something is touched by a sheret, by a dead sheret, then it becomes tameh. Or a person is touched by them, they become tameh. But then you go to a mayan or a burr, then you become tameh. So, but it mentions a mayan and it mentions a burr, and therefore, and each one it mentions in connection with mayan, when it says mayan or burr mikve mayim, implies whether it's a mayan, it has to be water, whether it's a burr, it has to be water, so nothing else. Okay, the question still is, ema aidi va'aidi lama'uti shamashkin. Maybe you could argue, fine, you have two miyotim, but maybe both of those are still meant to exclude the other liquids. So fine, you can't tovel in wine, you can't tovel in olive oil, etc. But you would say blood is still maybe included because it's called mayim. So why would you need two miyotim? Because you could argue, chad lamu'uti zoichlin v'chad lamu'uti mechunasin. You could argue like this. Now we have, a mikveh itself has to be mechunasin. The water has to be collected in one place. If you have, that's why in a mikveh, if the water is in a mikveh, if the water is flowing around, then it's not kosher. It's part of the reason why. That's why you can't have cracks in the walls. That's why in most mikvehs the filter has to be turned off when you tovel, etc. However, what you could have, Rashi explains, at least on a d'oraisa level, what you can have is you can have a partial mikveh. Now we know you need 40 sa for a mikveh, but you can have the majority of a mikveh is made up of meg shamim, is made up of rainwater that collected in a pit, let's say, the 21 sa or more. Then what you're allowed to do on a daraisa level, derabbanan not, but on a daraisa level, you're now allowed to take 19 sa, up to 19 sa of mayim sha'uvim, of drawn water, make it run along the ground, which is called zoichalin. Zoichalin means like it crawls along the ground, kind of, and have it flow into the mikveh, and you'll have a kosher mikveh.
If you started
with a majority of meg shamim,
then you have, on
a deraisa level, that would make a valid mikveh. So maybe the reason why you have two miyotim in the psukim, it is to be memayit other liquids other than water and blood. So one comes to say that zoichalin doesn't work, that if you were to have, for example, 21 sa of water, you cannot have 19 sa of wine flow on the ground into it to make a complete mikveh. And the other one, that mechunasin, that you can't have that you can't have a mikveh an original mikveh of 40 saw, or the majority of it or whatever, made out of wine, let's say.
Mechunasa
means collected in one place. So, but maybe still we don't have a miut to exclude blood from being used as part or even all of a mikveh. We know that there are two miutim. So Yaakov Minah is arguing that maybe the two miutim, none of them are excluding blood. Blood is just as kosher for a mikveh as water, maybe. What are the two miutim for that the other five liquids among the Shiva Mashkim cannot form part of a mikveh, whether they're the Zeichelin part or whether they're the Mechunasin part, whether you have the part that's originally there and then you're going to have one of these is water and then you're going to have 19 saw of one of these other five liquids flowing into it, or whether you're going to have the other way around, 21 saw of one of these and 19 saw of water flowing into it. Either way, it wouldn't work. But maybe indeed, if you had a mikveh of 40 saw of blood, it would work. And by the way, it doesn't even have to maybe be 40 saw of blood. First of all, he can be talking about, again, part of it could be made out of blood, but also on a daraisa level, the Gemara talks about in some other places, you need 40 saw to tovel a person because that's the volume of a person's body, but to tovel other smaller things. For example, if you have a needle that's some, like the last Mishnah in Perek Yeshmal and Samikva, you have a case over there where a needle is coming, you need to make it tahor on a daraisa level. The Gemara talks in some other places, all you need is a revius of water to tovel it in. Midrabanan, you still need a full mikveh 40 saw. So here also, maybe you could tovel it in a revius of blood. So how do we know that now? The answer is ultimately tlosa miyotik sivim. It's not just two miyotim, we actually have three miyotim in the psukim. Mayan mayim, ubur mayim, mikveh mayim, because you have three nouns that it mentions in the pasuk before the word mayim, and each one is meant to go with the word mayim. So your mayan, a spring, goes together with the word mayim. That's one miut. So a spring can be only of water. A bur, a pit, can only be of water. And the third one, mikveh, that a mikveh can only be of water. So with those three miutim, two of them teach us that the other liquids cannot be used either for the mechunasin or the zeichelin. And the third one teaches us the same is true of blood. Even though blood of behemoth is called water as far as the dinim of kisei adam, and that's why you don't have to cover it. But as far as a mikveh, it doesn't work. There you need only water and none of the other six liquids.
So mayan, bur,
and mikveh. Those are the three miyotim, because each one of them goes with the word mayan. So between those three miyotim, one teaches us that other liquids can't be mechunasin, you can't have a collection of them in tovelin. Another one teaches us they can't be zoichelin. And the third one teaches us the same thing is true of blood, even though blood is elsewhere called mayan. So that's it. So that establishes that, so you don't have to do kisei adam, for blood of behemoth. That's the answer. Okay. There is, by the way, a sicha in Chelek Lam Zayin where the Rebbe analyzes it. It's a Rambam sicha. Actually, we'll talk about more parts of it later on in the week when we get to another aspect of the dinim of kisei adam on Daf Pei Zayin Bez Hashem. But in the course of that sicha, the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea why indeed it is that we said in the Mishnah and we learned in the Gemara so far that only Chayas and Ophos require kisei adam, behemoths do not, and we said only Cholin does, Kodshim don't. So the deeper idea of it is that dam represents something that you have a chayus in, because blood is warm, it's life-giving and whatever. And the point is, your chayus should mainly be in things of kedusha. So therefore, when you have, you're doing something which is like outside the realm of kedusha, it's not something that's also per se, but it's dvarim amutarim, it's the optional things in life, such as shechting animals and eating them. So then you're required to put that chayus in the dirt. In other words, to show that it's not particularly important to you. It's not what you're kochen zichin in things of the world. You're kochen zichin things of kedusha, which also explains then why it doesn't apply to kodshim, because kodshim is the opposite. You should have a koch. You should have a warmth and a firing. Because in things of Torah, in things of kedusha, in things of avodah.
So there's three mutim.
Okay, that's what we just said, but I'm explaining the more general fact, and then that I've also talked about the idea that a behemoth then represents, when we say that a behemoth doesn't require kisei adam, the idea is because you have many, if not most, behemoths in those days were brought as korbanos. So therefore, a behemoth represents a person who is on a higher level where they are engaging with the world, but in a way they're coming from a point of view of kedusha, as opposed to the average person doesn't necessarily engage with the world from that point of view. They're able to have a chayus without it having to be buried in the dirt, because their chayus in inyanei olam itself is part of kedusha, and therefore that's symbolized by not having to cover the blood of a behemoth. But yeah, okay. But that's it. So far as a mikveh, we have three
okay.
meals.
Also, it's good show.
No,
we don't
okay, but again, the point is, we said because most oifers are not necessarily brought as korbanos. Behemoths, the behemoths in general, all behemoths are in the category of being able to be brought as korbanos. Among oifers, you only have two species that can. So it's not quite the same thing. Okay. Turn on our bottom. We learn it a brisa. Now, the Pasuk mentions, the Pasuk introduces the concept of kisi adam with the words, that ish ish mebeis Yisrael, asher yosud seid chaya oif asher ya'achol, who traps a wild animal or a bird that can be eaten, then you have to shech, then you have to spill out the blood and cover it with earth. So asher yosud, ainly el asher yosud, so if you only have those words in the pasuk, you would only know that it applies if you trap the animal, not necessarily with a bird, not necessarily if you raise it in your house. Nitzodin v'omdin me'alehin, what if they're already in effect trapped on their own, because they're not vos in the town of Berlin, for example, geese or chickens that you raise in your house, how do you know that you have to do kisi adam on them as well? Therefore, the person doesn't just say, asher yosud, that he traps. It also continues, seid, a trapping. So therefore, that extra word teaches us mekom mokim. Regardless whether you actually trapped it or not, if it just meant that you trapped it, it would have just said, asher yosud chaya oif. The extra word seid teaches us that regardless whether you actually trapped it or not, you do have to do kisi adam, as long as it's one of the species, chayas or oifers, that requires.
Funny, we're using the word seid to exclude seid.
Yeah, well, that's how it is. We have an extra word over there, so therefore, yeah. Okay. Im kein ma tamad loim asher yosud. So indeed, why in that case does the pasuk use the phrase asher yosud in the first place, which would be misleading?
Right.
The reason is limda torah derech eretz shelo yochel adam boser elabaz mana hazois. The torah by this is teaching us the proper way of acting, that a person should only eat meat with this kind of preparation. Meaning Rashi says that a person should act as though in order to eat meat, he has to go and trap it and hunt it. Meaning, in other words, a person shouldn't be eating meat all the time, because then he'll run out of money fairly quickly. So therefore, by using the word asher yosud, by using the phrase asher yosud, the Torah is hinting to that idea. So now we're going to talk about a little more on this topic, because I was going to expand a little bit on this topic about household economics, about the proper way that a person should live in order to maximize their money. Turn it up on him. So the pasuk starts by saying, in parashas, till now we've been talking about in parashas Achrimos, which is where the mitzvah of kisi adam is. But we also have the concept of shechting animals and eating them is in parashas Re'eh, where the Torah mentions that when Hashem expands your boundaries, and you'll live far away from the Beit Mikdash, and you won't be able to bring korbanos all the time, so then you're allowed to shech meat. So the pasuk says, ki yarchev Hashem alekech hazgvulcha, when Hashem broadens your boundaries, by that limda Torah derech eretz. The Torah is also, now why did I have to mention that point? You could just say that once you're in Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to shech the animals. The Torah, by that, is also teaching you the proper way of behavior, that a person should only eat meat when they have a desire, when they have an appetite for it. In other words, don't just eat meat stamazoi, you should only do it on special occasions, basically. Again, for the same reason, so you don't run out of money. So you would think in that connection, maybe it's good enough. Okay, so a person can buy meat in the store and eat it. No, therefore, that same passage continues, you should shecht from your own cattle and your sheep. Meaning, basically, in other words, the lesson is supposed to be, if you have animals of your own that you can afford to shecht, then go ahead. And if not, then don't be spending extra money on buying it from the store.
Let's
go a little further. We'll see. Yochel yizbach kol b'kore v'yochel koizboinei v'yochel. So maybe we would think in that case, a person can consider fine. As long as I'm not spending money on it, as long as it's just possessions that I have of my own animals, then I can splurge. I can go shecht all my cattle and eat them, or shecht all my sheep and eat them and have one big blowout party. No, tamad lama mi b'korcha. Therefore, the passage says, from your cattle, implying like kol b'korcha. Meat sounds cover like cold sounds. So don't be a spendthrift even on the things that you already own, where you can argue that therefore you're not necessarily losing money by shechting them and eating them. Nevertheless, Jewish gelt is a precious thing. So don't waste it unnecessarily. Mikan Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, based on this pasuk, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, we can learn as follows. Misha yeshle mona, if a person only has a mona, a certain amount, a small amount of money, Yukach lichsoi lilachsoi, really it's supposed to be, which means for his, he should buy for his cooking pot, litra yerek. Let him buy a litra, which is a merit, which is a certain weight of vegetables. In other words, don't eat meat if you have such a limited income because you're not going to be able to afford it. Asara monet. Exactly what it sounds like, meat. So if a person has only a mana, then all he should be buying is vegetables. Hold on. No, vegetables means vegetables. It means meat. Asara mana, if he has 10 mana, so he has more money, fine, then he can afford a little better food. Yikach lachso litra dogim, then he can buy for his cooking pot, he can buy a litra of fish. Hamishim mana, if he has 50 mana, yikach lachso litra basar, then he can afford to buy a litra of meat to cook in his pot. Meya mana, and if he has 100 mana, then fine, yishpasu like shidera b'chol yom, then they can put up a pot for him to cook every day, then he's entitled, in other words, to eat meat every day. But if he has less than that, then he should only be eating the meat once in a while. And if he has even less than that, then not at all. Eat fish or eat vegetables.
According to his financial situation,
right. So the question is the Enoch Amos. Okay, so what about though these people who said, we said before, the people who are not so well off, the people who are eating a litra of fish or a litra of meat? The ones who are better off. This is how Rashi explains. The last two that we mentioned, the ones who can afford fish or can afford meat, Amos. When exactly are we saying that they should be eating them? Do we necessarily mean every day? And the answer is no. Me'erev Shabbos, la'erev Shabbos. No, it means even they should be splurging on these kinds of things only once a week on Erev Shabbos and eat it recovered Shabbos. Even they, the people who have 50 or 100 mana, we're not saying necessarily that they should be eating fish or meat every day. No, meaning they cook it on Erev Shabbos and they eat it Friday night. In fact, the Gemara mentions that your Shabbos day meal is supposed to be nicer than your Shabbos night meal. On the other hand, the Gemara tells us in Yuma that the derech eretz, the proper way of doing things, is to eat meat at night. So therefore, that's what the Gemara is telling us over here. You make sure your Erev Shabbos means Friday night, so that's when you should be having your fish and your meat mainly.
The
nicer meal should be Shabbos day, but in terms of meat, it's better to be having that Friday night than Shabbos day.
What do you mean by
nicer meal? Nicer as in like you spend more on it or you have more dishes or whatever, yeah.
But the meat should be
mainly reserved for night because that's generally the time, the Gemara tells us in Yoma, is generally the time to eat meat. We see that Hashem gave Jewish people in the Midbar, yeah. Hashem gave them slav by night and then mon by day. It was that Hashem gave it to them close to the evening, so that way they don't have enough time to prepare it. But still, the Gemara explains in Yoma, on the other hand, the fact that it was in the evening implies that derech eretz, the proper way of behaving, is to eat meat more at night. Okay.
Is it proper to eat meat at night, or meat should be eaten at night?
It means, in other words, if you're going to be eating meat, as we're saying over here, not necessarily is everybody going to be eating meat anyway, then the better time to do it is at night. So what we're saying, again, in our Gemara... Okay, again, all Gemara is telling us, if you don't have very much money, don't splurge on meat.
Regardless of money.
Right. So
if you have the money,
then the time to eat meat is at night, preferable to the day. Right. Okay. Now, this that we just said, that when the Gemara asks the Enoch Amos, these other people, when are they supposed to be eating the fish or the meat? That's Rashi explains that that's what the Gemara means. That it means that even these people who can afford fish or meat because they have 50 or 100 mana should really only be doing that on Shabbos. Marsha explains the other way around. The question is, even the people, the poorer people, the ones who we said can only afford vegetables, the ones who can only afford vegetables, are they never supposed to eat fish and meat? And the answer is no. Even they should be trying to eat fish and meat on Shabbos. They should save up a little money over the week and try to afford fish and meat for Shabbos. Interesting side thing on this, by the way, which. It mentions over here that if a person has 50 mana, then he can buy a litra of meat, which means, in other words, now we said before, ki yarchav Hashem alekecha zglocha, when Hashem broadens your boundaries, there's an interesting question then that was brought to the Noda B'Yehuda. A certain person had borrowed money, and the deal was that when is he obligated to repay the money? The expression was when ki yarchiv lo Hashem, when Hashem broadens things for him. In other words, when his financial situation improves. So eventually it got to the point where he had 50 gold coins, and the other people came and they argued on the basis of what some safer from a generation before that or whatever brings on the basis of Al-Gemara, that if a person has 50 gold coins, then it's called Ki Yalka Bashem Lekachas Zorcha, it's 50 mana. So therefore they're arguing we should have to be paid back now. So the Noda Behuda, first of all, starts by saying you're not really supposed to learn matters of halacha from Agadta. However, then the Noda Behuda goes into a whole elaborate calculation about the purchasing power of 50 money in those days versus the purchasing power of money nowadays. And he ends up saying that no, for the person to be considered Yavka Hashem Alekechaz Glocha, like what we're saying in the Gemara over here, he would have to have some like 3,000 gold coins and then in the money of those times or whatever. And therefore, in other words, you think he's rich. He's far from rich, and leave him alone. It's not quite yet Yavka Hashem Alekechaz.
Well, if we have 50 mana, we're not poor.
It depends what a mana is. It depends what the purchasing power of it is. That's the okay, the Noda Behuda in the Struva makes the point that the purchasing power of money varies at different times. Sometimes there's lots of money available, but there's no goods. Sometimes there's a lot of goods, but nobody has any money. It's a matter of economics.
Today,
I don't know. Well, how much is the mana? You have to go calculate how much. Okay, but the point is, also, it's different. We have a different kind of economy nowadays than we did then, and it's not directly comparable, the purchasing power of things in the times of the Gemara versus now. You have certain things were very cheap in the times of the Gemara, and nowadays are very expensive, and vice versa. In fact, Tosfos mentions in this connection over here, we said that if a person is middle class, if he has 10 mana, then he can afford meat, and if he has more than he can afford fish, and if he has more than that, he can afford meat. Tosfos points out there's a medrash that actually implies the other way around, that in some places fish was more expensive than meat. The Pashtos, according to Tosfos, the same. Bring from a medrash that there were places where fish is more expensive than meat, whereas Al-Gemara is implying the other way around. So it all depends. Okay. All right. Anyway, continuing. Amar Rav, Tzrichin Anu Lachosh L'Divrei Zakin. So Rav says, you know what? We really have to be concerned about what the elder, meaning Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, said. This whole thing that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, that if you only have a mana, then you buy vegetables, and if you have 10, then you buy fish, and if you have 50, then you buy 100, and only then you buy meat, etc. We have to be concerned for that, and therefore make sure that we eat only lighter food, only cheaper food. On the other hand, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Abba, Mishpach of Briyam Abba, on the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says, Abba, which was his name for Rav, either as a title of respect or because Rav's actual name was Abba. Anyway, Abba came from a family of healthy people. So therefore, he could afford that. He could afford to live on, and he could be recommending to people that you can afford to live on cheap food and he'd still be healthy. Abba could go in Onu, but people like us who are weaker, who are not so healthy, Mishi Yeshlet Prutta, but when a person has even a Prutta in his purse, don't hold on to it. You're just sending the Chenmini right away. Run over to the store with it and buy yourself some food. Because in other words, we need to eat. Wait. Amr of Nachman says, in our times, we're after Rabbi Yechanan's time, and the world is getting weaker and weaker, so therefore people are not even as strong as they were in Rabbi Yechanan's time. So Rabbi Nachman says, we're even at a lower level, we have to already borrow money and eat. In other words, at least in Rabbi Yechanan's time, he's saying, when you have a prutta, then go spend it on food. Rabbi Nachman is saying, we don't even have that. If we were to do that, if we can only eat within our means, then we're gonna starve. So therefore, we have no choice but to borrow, and we have no choice but to borrow in order to be able to eat and remain healthy. No, Rabbi Nachman himself is rich, but he's saying in our generations, the economy is not so good. There is, though, with that said, I did see a vote on it that says that also Rabbi Nachman means in a ruchniistic sense. You have people who are able to serve Hashem with their eating itself. And I'm not going to say, so to speak, like we're not on that level. Our eating itself is not necessarily our avodah. It's like we're borrowing, and then their intention is we're going to pay back afterwards by using the energy for Torah and Mitzvah. Okay. Continuing on this topic of household economy, the Pasuk says in Mishlei like this, Kvasim Lulavashecha, you have a couple of psukim back-to-back in Mishlei over there. Kvasim Lulavashecha, I'll quote the psukim first, and then the Gemara is going to douse in phrase by phrase. Kvasim Lulavashecha, literally it means sheep should be for your clothes. Umechir Sada Atodim, and the value or the exchange of a field should be goats. The day Chalev Izim, Lulach Machal, Lulachem Beisecha, and it's enough you'll have enough goat's milk for your food and for the food of your household, v'chayim l'nare secha, and life for your maidservant. So now the Gemara is going to douche in these took in phrase by phrase. Kvasim l'vashecha means it means you should be wearing what you shear off the sheep. In other words, Rashi says the point is that the Shlomo HaMelech is advising you, buy yourself sheep. That way you'll have wool to be able to wear for clothing. Marsha explains it's also a continuation of what we said before. It means, in other words, don't be looking for luxurious clothing. Don't expect that you're going to be wearing silk or whatever. Make do with cheaper wool clothing. And when the pasuk continues, "Mechir sada aturdim," it says the exchange or the price of a field should be goat, meaning "La'olam yimka adam sada v'yikah aturdim." A person should always be ready to sell a field and buy goats with it, because then you have goats. So actually, it actually says sheep, because then you get out of the milk. That way you have what to eat, as well as you have the wool to wear. Mechir, the price, the exchange of a sada, of a field, should be aturdim. So a person should sell a field and buy goats or sheep. Don't do the other way around. Don't sell goats and buy a field, because, yeah, I mean, of course, you can also live off the produce of a field, but it's not as easy. It's not during all seasons of the year. It's more likely to be variable depending on the weather and whatever. So it's more chance. But not always. That's what I'm saying, because it's more chancy. There can be bad weather. That's fine. Oh, animals don't pass away. Animals die. Whatever. The point is that they're fine. But they have a herd of them, and that way you'll always make sure that you'll have some. Okay. You know what? The Rambam does actually use the expression in Hilchos Deos. The Rambam says that a person should sell metaltolin and buy a field. So actually, one of the Mefarshim on the Rambam points out, based on our Gemara over here, evidently the Rambam means metaltolin means things that don't produce. That don't produce an ongoing income. So then a field is better off than them. But goats or sheep are still better because you have a year round thing you can get out of them. What?
And they produce more goats also.
This is also true.
Goats produce more goats than the field.
A field doesn't produce more fields. It produces fruits. Fine, but after a while you run out of where you're gonna whatever. Okay, fine. So that's the good advice that Shlomo HaMelech is giving you, that if you have a field, better you should be selling it and buying goats or sheep rather than the other way around. Okay. Then when the pasuk continues, v'dei chalev izim, there will be enough goat milk. It means daye la'adam shi'istanis mechol of doyim utvoyim shabatayich beisay. A person should consider it enough to live off the milk of the goats and the sheep that he has in his house. In other words, Rashi says, don't shech the animals themselves and eat them, because then you have nothing left. Once you eat the meat, instead continue to eat and drink the milk and eat the cheese and whatever that you make, and that way you have an ongoing thing. Marshall also explains this again, keeping with what the Gemara was saying before. Don't be expecting that I have to eat meat and therefore you're gonna end up shechting the animal. Instead, make do with, okay, you want something to eat with your bread, you'll have milk or you'll have cheese.
Should we try that?
You need protein, but that's the point. You can get protein from milk and from cheese as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when the pasuk continues, v'chayim l'nare secha, when it finishes off the pasuk, and life for your young maidens, so it doesn't just mean your maidens, it means the members of your family. So Amar Mazutra, Breder of Nachman, what it means is, I skipped the line, l'lach mechal l'lechem beisecha, the pasuk continues that you have goat's milk, as we said, l'lach mechal, for your food, l'lechem beisecha, and for the food of your household, implying l'lach mechal kodim l'lechem beisecha, providing for yourself comes ahead of providing food for your family, because you're the one who's working, so you need food. Now we'll learn on Amud Beis, you do have to honor them more than yourself, but that means, in other words, as far as the quality of the food, should be better. But if you have a choice, basically, who's going to be eating? Like they say on the airlines, when you're putting on the oxygen mask, first put on your own, then put on the kids, because if you're going to be in a bad way, you're not going to be able to help the kid either. So yeah, similar idea. Okay. It means make sure that you're giving a life, you're giving a way of living to the young people in your family. Meaning, so here the Torah is teaching you the proper way of acting, that a person shouldn't get his children used to eating meat and wine, because then eventually they may not be able to afford it. So like this, give them chayim, teach them to begin with, teach them to make do with less, basically. To be thrifty, to make do with less, yeah. Okay. More on that topic. Amar Rav Yochanan,
Haroit. That even applies to rich.
The Pashtus, I mean, each in their own way. I mean, we said before that if a person has 100 mana, Rav Elazar has already said, then fine, he can be having a pot. You can be having him, you know, so we're saying, and it would teach them thrifty ways, because even you yourself are rich, not necessarily are they going to be, you know, Gaugalush Chosebailam after all. So, yeah. Gaugalush Chosebailam, that riches and poverty are a wheel that turns in the world, and you always have in one generation a family is rich, and the next family, then the next generation they're poor, and vice versa.
So during the week, you should teach them to be rich.
So not on Shabbos and Yom Tov, not Shabbos and Yom Tov, as the Gemara tells us in Beis, so whatever expenses you spend on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you get repaid. So actually, the truth is, actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about there's different things. And on the one hand, you have a Gemara in Beis that says Labua live ani peraya, that Hashem says borrow on my behalf for expenses for Shabbos and Yom Tov, and Hashem says I will pay back. On the other hand, you have Gemaras elsewhere. Sachem, I think, I say Shabbat Chochel about the start of Fabrius, even make your Shabbos a weekday rather than have to take help from other people. So in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about that the one difference is basically how poor is the person. If he's able to borrow money and he expects to be able to pay it back, because if you borrow money without any expectation of paying back as a loiver rosh of all your shalom, it's not a good thing. So then do that. But then do that. But if you're not even, if the only possibility is to take tzedakah, that's when we say, I say Shabbat Chochol. The Torah actually mentions at the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, which means, you know, to even make your Shabbos like a weekday. Don't make Shabbos any more special as far as food. Like maybe a tiny bit. Like maybe, okay, you have like a little fish or something, as opposed to avoid having to take tzedakah from other people. The Torah actually mentions at the beginning of Hilchot Shabbos, he says he was in that situation. He and his family were very poor. And he says a number of times, he says, I discussed with my father, the Rosh, what are the parameters of these halachas, when exactly you're supposed to borrow versus when you're not.
I mean, don't you have organizations?
So you have nowadays, you have organizations, you have some Shabbos and whatever. So yeah, I mean.
But I'm saying that's kind of going against.
No, because to the extent, I mean, people are coming to them. It's not necessarily the best thing, but on the other hand, I mean, some people figure they can't hack it otherwise. But for example, you know, you have the famous story of Mazutra and his wife and the Gemara and Ksubas over there, that they would go that Mazutra would go every Thursday night and drop off bundles of money by people's doors so they'd have what to afford for Shabbos, and that's considered one of the highest forms of tzedakah. So yeah, if a person is giving, then by all means, but it's not necessarily a person shouldn't necessarily be taking under all circumstances. It's complicated, but it is somewhat complicated, the details. But yeah, you have the basic idea that a person has to learn to live to live on less. All right, let's go on. Amar of Yechman, since we mentioned about this idea of that it's good to raise sheep and goats, because then you have milk and wool and whatever from them, so Rav Yechman says in this connection, if somebody wants to become wealthy, yasik with the hemadaka, he should be involved in raising small animals, sheep and goats. And in fact, Amar of Chista, my dechtiv ba'asher is tenecha. In fact, why is it that flocks of sheep are described in the pasuk with the word ashteroids? So the word asheros is related to the word osher. Shema asheros et baleim, because flocks of sheep make their owner wealthy. So that's what we said, that they're even better than having a field. Mind you, Tosfos actually mentions there's a different Gemara in Tzachim that says that a person who raises behemoth dacha is never going to see a simin bracha, in other words, they're never going to be financially successful. So Tosfos says over here, the difference is that in Tzachim it's talking about where you're raising them in settled areas. And the problem is ayin hara. People see your sheep, and then it causes an ayin hara. Here we're talking about you raise them out in the forest or far away from people. So therefore there's no ayin hara, and therefore they have the capability of making a person wealthy.
We believe in ayin hara. Like
of course we believe in ayin hara.
That, I mean,
yeah.
That much.
Ayin hara is
we like a superstition.
No. Yeah. And you have Gemaras all over the place that talk about it, and they talk about that bracha is only something. No. It's a real thing. No. It's a real thing in Torah. One idea behind the mechanism why Ayin Hara works is basically because I don't remember where it comes from. I think it comes from one of the Balei Amusar. I don't remember, but something along the lines of that when you have somebody who's very successful in one way or the other, and other people see him and they get jealous, like, you know, why does that guy deserve it and I don't, something like that. So that causes Hashem to reevaluate, you know, does that person actually deserve it that much? Especially if it's causing tzar to another yid, and therefore that can have an effect.
Okay, but if we don't believe in it,
it's not a question of believing in it or not.
Can we not be subject to it? Like, is it like Mazel?
So the Gemara does mention in some places, for example, in Brachas. The Gemara does mention in Brachas, for example, that people from Shevet Yosef are immune to the Ein Hara. because Yosef himself controlled his eyes, and therefore he was zocher in that bracha for his descendants. Fine, if any of us know, we'll shave at Yosef, then fine. But then, to that, you know, to a certain extent, yeah, to a certain extent, it is one of those things that the more a person believes in it, the more of an effect it has, and vice versa. But on the other hand, there is also that point that you don't want to flaunt it in a way that causes fire to another yid, because that can have a negative effect. That's true also, but there the Gemara actually mentions in Bava Kamma that if you're growing it out, again, out in the middle of nowhere, in the forest or whatever, then it's not such a problem. The problem is when it's near settled areas, where therefore it goes and grazes in other people's fields and whatever, yeah. Okay. All right. V'amar Rav, and also Rav Yechanan says, since we're mentioning pieces of good advice, Kosa dechoshin v'lo kosa dechoshin. Rav Yechanan says, if you have a choice, you're better off drinking a cup that magic has been done to it by that black magic has been done on it, v'lo kosa dechoshin, rather than a cup of lukewarm water. Because lukewarm water is even worse for you, as bad as the effect of kishuf might be on you, the effect of lukewarm water would be worse. But that's just because it's more likely for bacteria to grow in it. That's Steinsaltz says as much.
No, one second.
If you boiled it and let it... One second. Now, first of all, this rule of Rabbi Yechanan's only applies if you're drinking it out of a metal container. But if you're drinking it out of an earthenware container, it's not that bad. It's not that bad because I guess when you have the metal containers, the warm water will leach metals out of it, and therefore it's worse for you, whatever. Also, even if it's a metal container, it's only bad for you if you didn't put into it sivya. Rashi explains sivya means like herbs and roots or spices or whatever, like tea leaves or whatever, other kinds of things that you might put in a hot drink. But if you put such things into the cup, less one bar, then it's not a problem. And even if you didn't put any sivya into the warm water, it's also not a problem, as you said, only if the water didn't previously boil. But if the water boiled, less one bar, then it's not a problem. Yeah, because of the pastures, if we're talking about bacteria, then the boiling kills the, yeah. So in other words, the problem would only be, this danger of warm water is only if it wasn't boiled, there's no herbs or whatever mixed into it, and it's in a metal container. That's when it's dangerous. That's what Rabbi Yechanan is telling us is dangerous. Okay. But Omer Rabbi Yechanan, also Rabbi Yechanan says, here's another matter of practical advice, which also goes back to this idea about not wasting money. But he kind of says it the other way around. If somebody was left money by his father, and he wants to lose it, which in other words, Rashi says, basically, we're talking about like an heir who inherited a fortune, so he didn't work for it. So to him, money doesn't mean much. So therefore, in other words, the three things that Rabbi Yechanan is going to mention that a person might do are easy ways to lose a fortune very quickly. We have a few other explanations among the Mefarshim, including there's one explanation. Actually, this Gemara is also in Bava Metzia, in Eila Metzia. And there the expression is that his father left him Moritz Rabbi. So there's actually a girsa over there, not rabbis, but ribis, that his father left him over money that he earned by ribis, and now the son doesn't want to have hanah from it. So therefore, he wants to use it. Well, no, of course not. The father is not supposed to take ribis. Seriously. No, so it might be. I mean, so that's the thing. So that's what Rabbi Yechanan is going to mention, three ways in which it's easy to use up money very quickly, so you get a certain amount of benefit from it, but you're losing money faster than you're making it, basically. I read, by the way, in this connection when I was preparing, I came across something where there was a fellow who had made a fortune with some kind of business that involved some kind of Aveira Chilul Shabbos, or I don't remember what it was or whatever. And then he gave a large donation to Satmar so what did the Satmar ever do with it? He, the Rav Yelush, I guess it was, said that you should use the money to build bathrooms and to buy toilet paper for the yeshiva. The money can be,
garbage money.
Yeah, sort of. It's like garbage money, so to speak. So what is it over here? Yubash klei pishta. Number one, the person should wear linen clothing, which as the Gemara is going to say, we're talking about a certain kind of linen, which is very expensive and tears very easily. So therefore, in other words, that's the point. This is the first thing that it's easy to lose a large amount of money that way. The yishtamash beklei tzchokis, and he should use glassware. The Yisker Poel and Val Yeshivimon and hire workers and don't sit together with them to watch them. Yubish clay pishdan, what kind of linen garments are we talking about that if he wears, he's likely to lose a fortune very quickly? It's talking b'kitna rumisa. It's talking about Roman linen. It was very expensive and very fragile. The Ishtamish b'klei tzchuches would be specifically b'zagusa chivarta, not just any kind of glass, but clear glass. Clear glass in those days was very expensive, very rare and very expensive. In fact, Tosfos brings from other Gemaras that imply that after the Churban there was no clear glass anymore. And Tosfos says it doesn't mean that it completely disappeared. It just means it became much rarer. So that's the point. In other words, like you have something very rare, very expensive, and because it's glass, it's very easily breakable. And the Yisker Perlin Val Yeshivim Mahim. And when we say he should hire workers, he hires workers and doesn't sit with them. How do you lose a fortune by that? Specifically, Betodi Genofish Psidayu. Specifically, we're talking about where a person is hiring workers and giving them oxen to plow with, which is they used oxen in those days to plow with. Now, meanwhile, these workers, if you don't sit with them, they're not going to care whether the oxen are overworked. They're not going to care whether they plow straight lines or whether they get tangled up in the underbrush or the vineyards or whatever. So therefore, you can easily lose a fortune like that. Tosfos brings another girsa that Betavri actually means that you hire these people to plow using oxen, but because you're not watching them, they don't plow deeply enough. So therefore, you plant and very little grows because the furrows aren't planted, aren't plowed deeply enough. I saw also a vote on this. I think from the Chose of Lublin. He says also in an Indian of Avoida, and it he says. Is that when we say that when you hire workers, you have to sit together with them. So we're workers for Hashem, but we know that when a person is a Baal Gaiva, ain't any who you chayim lodu. Hashem says, so to speak, I can't live with such a person. So therefore, if a person is a worker, not allowing Hashem to be with him because he's proud of his avoda and he's proud of what he's accomplishing, then he's like these workers over here who aren't being supervised, where the loss they cause outweighs the gain. Dorosh Rabavira Darshan, going back to the matter of household economy. So Rabavira one time said a drosha, Zimnin Omala Meshmeder of Ami, Zimnin Omala Meshmeder of Asi. Sometimes he learned it from Rab Ami and Rab Asi, so sometimes he would tell it in the name of one of them and sometimes in the other. My Dichtiv, what does it mean? A Pasuk in Tehillim, Toiv Ish Choinen Umalve. It's good for a person who's choinen, who has regard, who cares for the poor and who lends. Yechalkol dvarav b'mishpat. He arranges his words or his matters with mishpat, with justice. So what does that mean? La'olam yochel adam v'yishta pachas mimashiyesh. Like a person should eat and drink. According to as if he had less than what he can actually afford. So that's, as we said before, eat cheaper food. A person should dress and cover himself in accordance with his means, so not wear cheaper clothing or more expensive clothing than what's appropriate to what he can afford. And he should honor his wife and his children with food and clothing and whatever more than what he has. So some of the Mepharshim explain that it means you should even borrow money in order to get them nicer clothing and nicer food and whatever. Some of the other Mepharshim, for example, Ben Yal Yadda says, doesn't mean that, don't go into debt for it. It just means, in other words, that this Tov Ishchon Malva that we're talking about, what he does is, he takes money that he would have otherwise used on himself and puts it towards their expenses. So that this way, it ends up that they're having more than him, but not, it's still the same pot of money. But instead of it being equal, he's giving them more than he's giving himself. Why should that be? Why should he be giving them more than himself? Because they, his wife and children, depend on him, and he depends on Hashem, who spoke and the world is created. In other words, so therefore, like they're relying on him, so therefore you have to make sure to do extra for them. There's a Musa Dikavort on this from Chaim Shmulevitz. You have similar ideas also in Sifrei Chassidus. The idea that when the bitachon that a person has itself opens up more of a channel milamayla for him. So therefore, when we're saying they trust in him, his family members trust in him, that alone opens up, that means that Hashem gives them more capabilities to be able to be mashpia to them. There's a story in this connection with Reb Zusha Anapol. He was very poor throughout his whole lifetime, and there's a story that one time a guy visits his house and he sees that Reb Zusha's wife and children are crying from hunger and they don't have anything and whatever. And meanwhile, Reb Zusha is oisik and avoida, and nothing of it bothers him. And the guy asks Reb Zusha, how is that? And Reb Zusha says, well, it's very simple. I'm depending on Hashem. They're depending on me, a boss of Adam. So of course they're upset. I'm only a boss of Adam. How much can I do for them? But I'm depending on Hashem, so therefore I can be happy. So it's a little bit like our Gemara over here, although with a twist. All right. Now let's get back to halacha. That we had the digression over here of Agadta to talk about why the Torah says ki yotzud, and now getting back to the halachas of Kisri Adam. Dorish Rav Eina apischa de beresh galusa. Rav Eina gave a drosha by the door, by the entrance of the house of the Reish Galusa. Hashoichet l'chol l'mashabes chayav l'chassus. If a person shechts an animal for a sick person, or a dangerously sick person, of course, on Shabbos, and it was a wild animal or a bird, chayav l'chassus, then he's obligated to do kisi adam. Now, how is that? On the face of it, kisi adam, you're digging up earth, and therefore you're being mechal Shabbos. So Rashi explains, once you're allowed already to break Shabbos to shech, then you're already allowed to break Shabbos also as far as doing the kisi adam. Many other Rishonim disagree with that. They say no. They say no. What it means is, we're not talking about over here to be over on an Isser Daraisa, for example, you actually have to dig up dirt. We're talking about if, let's say, you have loose dirt already, where it's only an Isser Darabanan to use it to cover. You don't have to dig, exactly. So then Rav Eina is saying that you should go ahead and do that on Shabbos, but not if it involves a Chilul Shabbos Daraisa.
Not for dig, but just to...
If it's loose dirt, then it's an Isser Darabanan. That's Isser Darabanan, because the dirt itself is mukta, and because, yeah. Okay. Omalahu Rabba. However, Rabba says to the members of the Reish Galusa's family, Eshtoima Ka'omar. This Rav Eina said something very, very odd. Dvar Tema, Rashi says, like something astonishingly wrong. Lishmetu ala mori mine. Therefore, let them take away his amore from him. What is amore? Rashi explains, it means amore means what he speaks with. So, like, so to speak, cut out his tongue. Like, if he's going to say such a blatantly wrong halacha that says that you can be mechal Shabbos, though, right? Or is it up on him like that? Then cut out his tongue. Then Rashi says another explanation, another girsa, is not ishtoima kamar, not that he said something amazingly wrong, but rather idishma kamar. If Rav Eina is saying this in his own name, in other words, this is his own chiddush, if it's something he heard from his rebbeim, fine, we can blame his rebbeim for saying something wrong, but if he himself is coming up with this chiddush, which is blatantly wrong, take away his amora, meaning not his tongue according to this explanation, but an amora, like you usually have a Rosh Hashiva in those days, would have an amora, somebody who explains what he's teaching to the public. So take that away, because he's obviously not fit to be a Rosh Hashiva. No, but that's the point, in other words, that Rav, according to this explanation, Rava is saying about Rav Eina, he doesn't deserve to be a Rosh Hashiva who has an Amora explaining what he's saying if he's going to say something so completely wrong. The Tanya, as in fact, we learn a Braisa, which it's a long Braisa, we'll go through it, but eventually at the end of it, we're going to see that you can't do Kisi Adam on Shabbos, even when the Shchita itself was allowed. So how could Rav Eina be saying that you're allowed to? And by the way, you do actually have a machlokas rishonim. What about if, let's say, for example, so let's say forget about loose dirt. Let's say, for example, there are cases. Let's say, for example, you have ashes from something that was burnt before Shabbos. Now you can have in Hilchas Shabbos, you can have that these ashes were designated before Shabbos, or even dirt for that matter, could be designated before Shabbos. Let's say, for example, that if there's saliva on the ground sometime during Shabbos, that you use it to cover that. Or let's say you have a kid who's not toilet trained yet, that you'll be able to cover up his waste on Shabbos. So then that dirt or those ashes are not mukta because you designated them before Shabbos. In that case, should you be doing Kisi Adam with them on Shabbos? The Rashba and the Ra'ah disagree on that, whether you should in that case. So if it involves a malacha d'rabbanan, then we're saying over here definitely not. If it's a malacha d'araisa, surely not. But if there's no malacha d'araisa or d'rabbanan and no issue of mukta at all, then it's a machlokas between them whether you should. Okay. Anyway, what's Rabba's braisa? How does he prove that? How does he prove that what Rav Eina said is not correct? D'tanya, we learn in a braisa. Rav Yosi Omer, koi ein shoch d'noisi b'yomtiv. As we said in the Mishnah, a koi, which is an animal that's a suffolk chai, a suffolk behema, you're not allowed to shecht it on yomtiv, because then you're going to have the question of whether you should do kisi adam, and you don't want to get into that. The im shoch de ein mechafin es doma, if you did shecht it against that, then you're not allowed to cover its blood on Shabbos. And why is that? Mikavachoymer. Rabbi Yossi says, I have a kavachoymer to prove that you shouldn't cover its blood. Uman Mila Shabbat Dor Dercha Shabbos Ein Sefer Dercha Yomtev Madach Mila, which if you have a Mila that definitely has to be done on Shabbos, namely if a baby was born on Shabbos and the eighth day, the next week, the eighth day is Shabbos, you do the Bris even on Shabbos. But Ein Sefer Dercha Yomtev, but when you have a Sopik whether the baby is of age for a Bris Mila, then you don't do it even on Yomtev. Namely, you have a case that Rashi brings from a Mishnah in Shabbos. Let's say, for example, you had a baby was born Bein HaShemoshes. You have a baby was born Bein HaShemoshes of Friday going into Shabbos. So now you have a suffix. On Friday, the baby might be only 7 days old. He might be eight, depending whether he was born Friday or Shabbos. Shabbos, you have a suffix whether he's 8 or 9 days old. You don't do the bris on Shabbos in that case. You wait till after Shabbos. And in fact, the Mishnah mentions over there that if you have Yom Tov follows Shabbos, you have to wait till Yom Tov as well. So we see that even a suffix is not even Dercha Yom Tov. A suffix of Mila is not even Dercha Yom Tov. So then, Kisui, She'ein Vadoi Dercha Shabbos. So then, Kisui Adam, where even if you have a definite case of Kisui Adam, you don't cover the blood on Shabbos, which is what Rabbah is trying to prove over here. And then we're going to discuss soon how we know that point. How much more so that a suffix of Kisui Adam should not be reason enough to do it on Yom Tov, even if to do it on Yom Tov. And that's why you don't do Kisui Adam of a koi's blood on Yom Tov. We mentioned before at the beginning of the parash, one reason for that, even first of all, I mean, usually it would involve digging or would involve loosening the dirt or whatever, which are malachas. And second of all, you have, even if you don't have any of those issues, again, even if you have ashes or whatever, the Gemara mentions in Beit for two reasons. One, the problem is, I mentioned at the beginning of the parak, because people are going to think that then the chel of it is mutter, which is not, because it's the suffix behema. And the other reason that Tosfos brings over here from the Gemara over there is because you only had in mind that those ashes that you designated before Yom Tov were only meant for a vadai case, we have to do kisui adam, or to cover something else, not for a suffix like in this case. Anyway, the point is that we see from this braisa, even if you have a definite case of kisui adam, you don't do it. You shechted a definite chayah or a definite oif. You don't cover the blood on Shabbos. Ein adin shein sfeika derech yom tov. How much more so a sofik of it, as in the koi, shouldn't be derech yom tov.
She means here yet she's for sure.
She'ein vadoi derech Shabbos, that even a vadoi case of kisui is not derech Shabbos. Ein adin, shouldn't it be a kavachomer she'ein sfeika derech yom tov? Amaloi or amruloi, so the other chachamim answer to Rav Yossi, that's not necessarily a proof. T'kiyas shofa begvulim techiach, I'll disprove your case from the case of blowing shofar out the gvulim, any place outside the Beis Mikdash or outside your Shalayim. She'en vador derech Shabbos. Now, you don't blow shofar even when you know this day is Rosh Hashanah. You don't blow shofar outside there on Shabbos, the same as Gzeira Zerabba. Utsfeika derech Yomtev. But on the other hand, a suffix of Tkiyas Shofar is derech Yomtev. What is a suffix of Tkiyas Shofar? Would be the case, as the Gemara is going to explain soon. Let's say, for example, you have a tumtum or an androgynous. So we don't know whether they're chayiv in tkiyas shofar. Only men are chayiv in tkiyas shofar. A tumtum and an androgynous are suffix male, suffix female, and yet we can blow shofar for them on Shabbos.
Shabbos in a way.
Not Shabbos, sorry, on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov. So therefore you see an example where something where vaday is not derech Shabbos, but a suffix is derech Yom Tov. So why shouldn't it be any different with kisui adam? Vaday is not Derech HaShabbos. In other words, even if you know it's Rosh Hashanah and you know this is a man who is chayav in Tkiyas Shofar, but a suffix is Derech HaYomtev. So therefore, it could be the same thing with Kisui Adam. Now, Tosfos brings up the point. What do you mean? What kind of a comparison is that? You're not allowed to carry on Shabbos. You're allowed to carry on Yomtev. The whole reason you don't blow shofar on Shabbos is Shema Yavirenu Alba Amos B'Shusadam. You might carry it in Shusadam. Yomtev, that doesn't apply. Tosfos says, maybe not actually. You could argue, says Tosfos, that if the tumtum or androgynous is actually a woman, maybe you're not allowed to carry the shofar outdoors for her, even on Yom Tov, for him, her, or whatever, on Yom Tov to blow for the tumtum or androgynous because maybe they're not obligated. On the basis of this Tosfos, the Shagat Aryeh argues that therefore, what it would mean is, even though it is true that women have minhag to listen to Tkiyas Shofar, and according to the Ashkenazic minhag, which is based on the Ramah, they're even allowed to say a bracha on it. But if they're hearing, like when you go on Mifta Shofar, but says the Shagas Aryeh, on the basis of this Tosfos, apparently you wouldn't be able to carry the shofar to them in the street on Shabbos. And the same thing with Lulav.
Because
not because of a suffix, because we're talking about regular women, where it's a Badai, they're not chayiv in Tkiyas Shofar, and it's a Badai, they're not chayiv in the Tevas Lulav. So therefore, based on this Tosfos, the Shagas Arya argues, you shouldn't be allowed to carry the Shofar or the Lulav in the street. So if you're going, so let's say you're going on the Tzoyim, according to the Shagas Arya, if you're going to be going and taking it from men also, then fine, because men are chayiv in Tkiyas Shofar and men are chayiv in Lulav. But if you're only for women, then he would say that
women,
not.
Vadai not obligated to hear Shofar on
right.
Rosh Hashanah?
Right, because the mitzvah says Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Same thing with all of them.
I thought that was the exception.
No. With that said, most other Acharonim, including the Alter Rebbe, disagree with the Shagas Arya on that, and that is why when people go on Mitzvah Shofar and people go on Mitzvah Lulav, they do carry the Shofar and they do carry the Lulav with them. They disagree on various grounds because Tosfos goes on to say that there's a difference between Soda Hayoim and maybe because there's a difference when you're doing it for Nachas Ruach for the women. Yeah, various other whatever. Yeah, no. I understand that, but nevertheless, the Mitoshel Hutul Soda in general, you're allowed to carry on Yom Tov. You're allowed to carry on Yom Tov. Even you know, remember the original. We're talking on Yom Tov. We're not talking on Shabbos. You don't blow a shofar and you don't take lulav on Shabbos.
Yes.
So I'm saying, you have many of the Achronim, including the Alter Rebbe, who say that there's no problem in carrying it on Shabbos, even if you're only going for the
You don't even know that.
Even you know that it's only going to be for women who are not chayav. So you have other issues about the brachas. That's another matter. But bracha, no, because then you have a problem that if they're Ashkenazis, then they can say the bracha. But if they're Sephardis, then they can't. But then they can. So then you have the question of who should say the bracha. That's another matter. But yeah, the Alter Rebbe just says mutar lahotzi ha'shofar l'shul sadam kedei l'tkoya lahem. Yeah, you have Yehini Bruns from Rishonim, from Rav Yeh, and Tur, and others. Even
it's
a Vada, they're not obligated. So this
is,
I don't know, I'd have to look up the reason, but whatever it is, they argue with, these Rishonim, including the Tur, and the Rav Yeh, and whatever, argue with Tosfos over here. Okay. Onward. Okay.
The halacha is
for us, it's for certainly, the halacha is like the Alter Rebbe. So in that case, that's what it is. Okay, let's continue. Heishiv Rabbi Lozer Hakapo Biribi Chuva. Rabbi Lozer Hakapo Biribi, which Biribi means Adam Gadol, Rashi says, a great Tam Chacham, answered, I have a refutation of you, Rabbi Yossi, are making a Kavachomer based on Mila, that therefore, that suffix of Kisi Adam shouldn't be Derech Yomtev, I will disprove your argument. Mal Mila Shekain Enin Ahegas. How are you comparing to Mila, which doesn't take place on the night of Yom Tov? Toma the Kisi Shinoi Vilele Yom Tovim. How are you comparing that to Kisi Adam, which could even take place on the night of Yom Tov, because you could shecht an animal by night? Omer of Abba, Zeach, Menad Vorim, Shehesh, Shomer of Chia, in the Aleim Chuva, Behesh, Rebbe Lozer, Akapa, Beribi Chuva. So Rav Abba says, you should know, this is one of the things on which Rav Chia said, that I can't find a way to refute Rabbi Yossi's Kavachomer, but then Rabbi Lazar Akafa Biribi was able to find a way to refute it. In other words, as the Gemara is going to say soon, the fact that the Chachamim argued against Rabbi Yossi on the basis of Tkiyas Shofar, that Rabbi Chia didn't consider to be enough of a refutation of Rabbi Yossi. But then when Rabbi Lazar Akafa Biribi comes along with his point about Mila not being by night versus Kisi Adam is, that Rabbi Chia realized that's a very strong refutation. Okay.
No,
So now let's finish up with our proof, and then we'll analyze the Braisa. Katoni mias kisui she'en vadoi decha Shabbos. Now, the Braisa had mentioned in Rav Yossi's argument that kisui adam of vadoi of it is not decha Shabbos. Now, my vadoi de kisui de lodochi Shabbos, what would be a case where you have a vadoi where you have to do kisui adam and we're saying you don't do it on Shabbos? Wouldn't it evidently be this case where you have the shechted for a sick person on Shabbos? Because otherwise, you're not allowed to shecht on Shabbos. How would there be a case? Kisi Adam on Shabbos. The answer is no. The Gemara says not necessarily. Leave a Dilma to all of a Shochat. Maybe you could say, maybe the price is, or maybe Rabbi Yossi is talking about, let's say a person was over, he was Mechal Shabbos, and he shechted. So then we're saying he shouldn't do Kisi Adam. Like we're taking away from him the ability to do Kisi Adam. Once he was over on one Aveira, then we take that away from him. But maybe when he shechted for a sick person, when he's entitled to, maybe that's not what Rabbi Yossi is talking about. The answer is no. Dunya de Mila. Because after all, Rabbi Yossi is comparing it to Mila. Ma Mila birushus. Mila is something which you're allowed to do. on Shabbos, when Mila is on the eighth day, you're allowed to do it. It's actually the mitzvah to do it on Shabbos. After Kisu Nami, there are sure. So obviously, the case of Kisu Adam, we have to be talking about where he was entitled to shecht on Shabbos, not where he was over and shechted. And that would be where he shechted for a sick person. Okay. So therefore, that's a proof. So therefore, that's Rabbah's proof against Rav Eina that even you had permission to shecht on Shabbos, because of course, for a chayla, you're still not allowed to do the Kisu Adam. Now let's analyze the braisa a little. Amru lo tkiyas shofar begvulim tchiyas. So he said after Rav Yosi said his kavachomer from Mila to say that therefore the covering of the kisya adam of a koi should not be done on Yom Tov because it's only a suffix. So he said Amru lo tkiyas shofar begvulim tchiyas. So he said the chachamim answered to Rav Yosi and they said I can disprove you on the basis of blowing shofar outside Yerushalayim. Because even when you're definitely chayiv in it, you don't do it on Shabbos, when Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbos. But when you have a suffix, when Yom Tov is on a weekday, and you have a suffix, then you do it on Yom Tov. So the question is, my tzveika, what kind of suffix are we talking about over here? Elaim a suffix chol suffix Yom Tov. Are we talking about the suffix which day it is, which is the reason why we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah? Is it that you're not sure whether today is Rosh Hashanah or whether yesterday was Rosh Hashanah or whatever? Why is that a proof? Obviously, Kiyas Shofar is Zoicha even definite Yom Tov, because the Torah tells us to blow Shofar on Yom Tov. How much more so is Zoicha when you don't know if it's Yom Tov or a weekday? What kind of a proof is that? Ela Sofik Ish Sofik Isha. No, rather the Sofik we're talking about, and the Braisa is, we're talking about it's definitely Yom Tov, it's definitely the day of Rosh Hashanah, but we're talking about the person who's blowing Shofar, or for whom it's being blown, or whatever, is a Sofik man, Sofik woman, namely a Tumter Mandragonist. But Rav Yosi, the Taimei, now why does Rav Yosi not consider that to be an argument against his position? Because he goes according to his own shita. Da'amit isha vadoris nami taka. Rav Yosi holds that even a definite woman is required to listen to do tkiyas shofar. Or not as required to, maybe, but not as required to, actually. He still agrees to the mitzvah shel zman grama. But he says she's able to. Titania, as we learn in the Braita, as far as a different mitzvah, Bnei Yisrael Somchin v'lo Bnei Yisrael Somchin. The pasuk tells us, the pasuk introduces the in Korbanos in Parshas Vayikra. It says Bnei Yisrael, Dabra Bnei Yisrael, Ve'amarat Aleim, and then it mentions that you do smicha on a korban. So by saying the word Bnei Yisrael implies only the men. Only men do smicha v'lo Bnei Yisrael Somchin. Women do not do smicha on a korban. Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Shimon Omer Noshim Somchin Rishus. Whereas Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Shimon say they could do smicha if they want to. Meaning, in other words, now Tosafot points out, they wouldn't lean on the behemoth of a whole kodeshim, because then if they're not required to, they can't do that. That would be doing work with kodeshim, which you're not allowed to do. What it means is they would lean, put their hands gently on it. But the point is, Rav Yosi and Rav Shimon are saying they're allowed to if they want to. So the same way, we don't say that it's a chilul yom tov to blow shofar for women who, even though they're not technically obligated in it, says Rav Yosi. And that's, by the way, another reason for these Rishonim to be arguing with Tosafot over here. Before we were talking according to the Chachamim. Is the halacha like the chachamim that they're actually not obligated, or is the halacha like Rabbi Yosi that they're taka not obligated, but they could if they want to? And if we say that they're allowed to, then we could say that you could carry it up on Shabbos on their behalf. Okay. So the point is, therefore, so the chachamim are saying, you know what, if you have a tumtum or androgynous, you wouldn't blow shofar for them on Yom Tov. And Rabbi Yosi says, why wouldn't you? Even if it was a definite woman, you could blow shofar for on Yom Tov, and it wouldn't be considered chilul Yom Tov. How much more so a tumtum or androgynous? So therefore, he doesn't consider that. Because it's from an unruly. It's a Sophic man, Sophic woman. They might actually be hired. And even if they're potter.
Sophic man and Sophic woman, it's neither.
As far as this, they're either a man or a woman. But, so therefore, if a man is chayev, so if they're a man, they're chayev. And if they're a woman, fine. Rabbi Yosi says that they could if they want. Okay. So therefore, Rabbi Yosi says, I don't accept your argument that we can disprove it on the basis of Kiyas Shofar, because in fact, I would disagree with you. A Sofik of Kiyas Shofar is actually Zoicha Yom Tov. Okay. So then, Omer Ravina, Ulam... Well, again, maybe the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. Maybe it's not. That's part of the thing. Omer Ravina, Ulam Maid Ka'amir Rabbanon Nami Islay Pircha. Ravina says, as a matter of fact, this argument of the Rabbanon, where they're saying that a Tumtum and an Androgynous are a Sophic, and therefore you wouldn't blow Shofar for them on Yom Tov, actually we can disprove, we can argue against their disproof also. We could argue, Malat Kiyas Shofar, Shekin Vat Pircha, Islay Pircha, you have a way of refuting their argument. Malat Kiyas Shofar, Because how can you compare from Tkiyas Shofar, Shekein Vadar, Doicha Shabbos, for Mikdash? Because after all, there is a case where Tkiyas Shofar is Doicha Shabbos, when it's Vaday, namely in the Beit HaMikdash or in Yerushalayim. Okay. Toma v'kislu d'lefe klal. How can you compare to Kisli Adam, where you never have that? Because we said before at the beginning of the parak that you don't do Kisli Adam by Kodshim. So you never have a case where Vaday of Kisli Adam is Doicha Shabbos, so it's not a valid comparison. Then continue the Braitha. We said Heshiv Rabbi Lazar Akapa Beribi, that Rabbi Lazar Akapa Beribi and the Ravina points out therefore that the Rabbanans are even if you accept that Rabbanan's premise, even if you accept that Rabbanan's premise that a woman or a tumtum that a woman is not chayav in Tkiyas Shofar and you don't do it for her on Yom Tov therefore, and therefore you wouldn't for a tumtum around during this either. Nevertheless, we could still disprove their attempted proof because it's not a valid comparison from that to Kisi Adam. Then we said in the Braith, the Heshiv Rabbi Lazar Akapa Beribi, Malam Mila Shekain Enin Ahegas Belele Yom Tovim. We said that Rabbi Lazar Akapa Beribi says, yes, but you can't prove from Mila to Kisi Adam either, because Mila, after all, does not take place on the night of Yom Tov. What kind of expression is that? We must say, Belele Yom Tovim, or Delay Naga, Meshau Lele Naga. What do you mean it does apply on other nights? You don't ever do Bris Mila at night. Yom Tov or not? Ella, no, you're right. You can't. That's right. So the Gemara says, right, what he meant to say is, Ela, Mala Mila, Shekain, and Enehegis, Belelus to the Yomim. It means that Mila doesn't take place by night, period. Not just Yom Tov night, but any night.
So,
as opposed to Tome Bekissi, Shenei Belelus to the Yomim. As opposed to Kissi Adam, can equally well apply by night or by day, because if you shech by night, you still have to do Kissi Adam. And on that, So therefore, you could argue, that's the point. So therefore, you could argue that Mila, yes, a suffix of it is not Jericho Yom Tov, but that's because Mila you also don't do by night. Kisi Adam, you can't necessarily prove from that a suffix of Kisi Adam, namely the case of a Koi, shouldn't be taking place on Yom Tov.
Because you can do it
at night. And Amar Rav Abba, again, Amar Rav Abba, Ze'echa Min Adroim, Sh'Amar Rav Chiya, this is one of the cases where Rav Chiya said, Ein li alei in tshuva, that one of the previous Tanoim had said a kal chomer, which Rav Chiya says, I can't find a way to disprove the Heshiv, Rav Elazar HaKapa Beribi tshuva, and what do you know, Rav Elazar HaKapa Beribi was able to find a way of refuting the kal chomer,
which
we said that's what he did, that he disproved it, because Mila doesn't take place by night and Kisi Adam does. Bottom line, therefore, is that if you shecht on Shabbos, you do not do the Kisi Adam on Shabbos, even if there's no issue of Chilul Shabbos at all. Again, if there's no issue even of Mukta, for example, you have ashes pre-prepared, then you have a machlokas rishonim between the Rashba and the Ra'ah, what you should do, whether you should do the Kisi Adam or not. I'm not sure what the final halacha on that is. And on Yom Tov, we had Rav Yossi arguing that you don't do Kisi Adam of a Koi because of the Sofik. And a Suffolk is not Doche Yom Tov, and Suffolk, whether you have to cover it or not, because the Suffolk is Chayor Behemoth.
Right.
So it's Chayor Behemoth. So therefore, you don't do Kisi Adam. If the blood is still visible after Yom Tov, then you cover it then. And the same thing, actually, if you shecht it for the Chola on Shabbos, and the blood is still visible after Shabbos, then you do Kisi Adam at that point.
When the blood is congealed, you still have to do Kisi Adam?
Could be. I don't know. I mean, the Bashos, as long as it's still visible as blood, I guess, yeah.
Is it visibility or is it...
The pastures is visibility, yeah.
Considered blood?
Yeah. I mean, as far as sprinkling on the Mizbeah, well,
no,
congealed, you can. But as far as Kisi Adam, the pastures, I don't know that it makes a difference. Okay.